Hello, my friends. It's Friday, March 14th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful State of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. On today's program, once again, we take a visit to Democrats' cave as House Minority Leader Chuck Schumer signals his support for voting for the continuing resolution to fund the government. Also, Greenland, Panama, and Canada all responding to the imperialistic threats from Orange Cheeto Mussolini. Also, J.D. Vance appeared at the Kennedy Center and got an earful from the people there upset about the cultural takeover of one of our finest artistic institutions. We have the former governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu, eyeing a return to government by running for the open Senate seat that Jeanne Shaheen will be vacating in the state of New Hampshire. We have a federal judge who is restoring the federal workers who were fired by the Doge kids. And of course, the White House is not too happy about that. We've got another episode of our recurring segment of Boycott Idaho, this time a look at the transgender healthcare bans in the handmaid state. And then a little bit of philosophy from yours truly asking the question, why do we have a government at all? It's all coming up today on The Radical Russ Show. As I was putting together yesterday's podcast, the Democrats in the Senate were actually looking as if they might stand up to King Felon the First. If you don't know the story of what's going on right now, there is the House budget that is going through the Congress right now. Of course, the House has to fund the government, and they cannot come up with a regular funding bill that they normally would run with because the Republicans have such a small majority, just a few votes, three or four votes there, that the hardline members of their caucus can't get behind some of the measures that other Republicans would get behind. So in order to provide the majority they needed to pass in the House of Representatives, they went with another continuing resolution, which is just basically to say, hey, let's just keep funding the government the way we've been funding the government. Don't make any changes. Let's just kick the can down the road for another few months. And that's what happened because the House Democrats, surprisingly, all stood together against passing any budget being proposed by the House Republicans. And part of the problem with the budget that they're proposing is that it's going to lock in the DOGE program. Understand that this so-called Department of Government Efficiency isn't a real department. It's just made up out of whole cloth. It's just Elon Musk and a bunch of his 19 and 20-something kids plugging in their thumb drives and hard drives, trying to get access to our federal data, trying to shut down our federal programs, most specifically trying to shut down our Social Security and our Medicare and our Medicaid, the benefits that we have paid into all our lives that they're trying to take away to fund, once again, another round of trillion-dollar tax cuts for the upper 0.1% that don't need them. So passing this budget would be a disaster because it would further empower Musk and Trump to continue the ransacking of the federal government that is well apace already. So the Democrats stand firm against that in the House. But since they are the minority, when all Republicans voted for it, I think it passed something like 217 to 213. It then goes on to the Senate. Now in the Senate, the Democrats have one tool at their disposal as the minority party, and that is the filibuster. Anything that needs to get voted on in the United States Senate has to first get past what's called a cloture vote. A cloture vote just means we're done arguing about it, now let's vote. And in order to get a cloture vote, you have to get 60 votes, because it only takes up to 40 senators to filibuster. And filibuster just means we're going to keep arguing about it until the cows come home, and the cows never come home, right? So the filibuster just means to, you know, put a pause, put a delay to just not let something get passed. The standoff here, of course, is a deadline of today, Friday at midnight. If this continuing resolution doesn't get passed, the federal government shuts down. And a lot of people would think, well, that isn't that a bad thing, federal government shutting down, but it's already being shut down. The Doge kids are already going through and firing people. They're already told the workers at the Department of Education to just not show up and to clean out their desks. So what harm would a federal government shutdown be worse than what's already happening? So the showdown comes to the Senate. The Senate is set to filibuster this thing. And yesterday, things were looking good. Yesterday, we were getting talk from the leadership that was signaling that the Democrats would stand fast in the United States Senate. They would stick to their filibuster and make it so that the Republicans would have to go back to the House and try to pass what's called a clean continuing resolution, that try to strip out the offensive stuff to the Democrats to continue funding the government the way it had been funded. It looked as if they were going to stand tall. Here was Chuck Schumer just, I guess this was Wednesday.
Funding the government should be a bipartisan effort, but Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input from congressional Democrats. Because of that, Republicans do not have the votes in the Senate to invoke cloture on the House CR. Our caucus is unified on a clean April 11th CR that will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass. We should vote on that. I hope our Republican colleagues will join us to avoid a shutdown on Friday.
Oh, okay. Yay. All right. The Democrats standing strong. There's Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, saying that the Republicans can't get past this. They cannot get past this filibuster. They don't have the votes to invoke cloture because us Democrats, we're all sticking together. You don't have the 60 votes you need. I sure hope you'll join with us to pass something reasonable, which, of course, is a silly ask. They're not going to join with us to do anything. But at least we finally get the Democrats standing up, finally pushing back against this fascist takeover of the United States. At least that's the state of things yesterday. And as I was getting ready to do the podcast yesterday, I thought about including that clip and praising the leader, the octogenarian Democratic leadership there. But there was a little part inside me that said, hold on, Russ, hold on. You got to give this some time. If you look out there in the distance, you can see it. You can see the opening. There it is. Democrats' cave. It's a little place that I invented. I'd heard so many times in my political career when I was doing political talk radio, the Democrats have caved on the latest proposal. Democrats have caved on the latest. Well, Democrats' cave is a place. It's a place they can't help but go back to anytime they feel any pressure from Republicans. Anytime there's a fear, oh no, the Republicans might say bad things about us. Oh no, Donald Trump might send out a bad tweet about us. And sure enough, my political instincts were correct, because just yesterday, Chuck Schumer did an about face.
For sure, the Republican bill is a terrible option. It is not a clean CR. It is deeply partisan. It doesn't address far too many of this country's needs. But I believe allowing Donald Trump to take even much more power via a government shutdown is a far worse option.
So Chuck Schumer now is signaling that he will vote to invoke cloture. And look, Chuck Schumer, as the leader of the Democrats, wouldn't be going out on a limb saying, all right, yeah, I'm going to vote against this thing, unless he knew he had enough other Democrats in his back pocket willing to join him that he wouldn't be saying this for no reason at all. So the reports I'm getting is he's got a few that are going to join. Fetterman already said he's going to join him, and fuck John Fetterman, as far as I'm concerned, the latest Manchin, Sinema, Lieberman, rotating villain of the Democratic Party. Had enough of John Fetterman. Please primary that guy. But also, he's apparently joined by the other New York senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, who, again, fuck Kirsten Gillibrand as well. She's been on my hit list ever since she led the crusade to oust Al Franken from the Senate. weird how the Democrats can be so concerned about Me Too that they kicked out one of the most effective senators we've had in the Democratic Party, because before he was a senator, when he was a comedian, he took a picture faking like he was grabbing a woman's boobs. A comedian taking a picture that he was faking grabbing a woman's boobs. Never actually touched her. That was too much to bear for Kirsten Gillibrand. Oh my goodness, Me Too, sexual harassment. We got to get rid of Al Franken. Oh, Democratic convention? Well, come right up, Bill Clinton. Why don't you come up and give a speech, Bill Clinton? Yeah, no problem with Bill Clinton. Come on in. You're fine. No sexual harassment there. So you got your Gillibrands and your Fettermans. Apparently Hickenlooper out of Colorado is going to join this thing. I don't have the whole list in front of me, but apparently he's got enough. He's got enough names there. They need 8 Democrats to join with the Republicans to invoke cloture. And once that happens, once the filibuster is over, the Republicans just need their majority to pass the budget. That's all they need. There are 53 senators and it's done. So this was the last chance to stop the Donald Trump budget, to stop the permanent installation of DOGE, to make some of these cuts permanent in the budget, and the Democrats cave. Now, Chuck Schumer wants to try to sell this to you. Oh, no, this would, yeah, it's a bad continuing resolution, but you know what would be worse is if we let Donald Trump have a government shutdown, because then he'd shut down agencies and not reopen them. You mean like now? Like he's shutting down the Department of Education? You mean like now when he's already firing people? The people out here are so hungry for a resistance party, for an opposition party to actually stand up. And once again, we're headed to Democrats' cave. Now, the real leader of the Democratic Party, as far as I'm concerned, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, slapped back at this fiercely yesterday. She told reporters, quote, "There are members of Congress who have won Trump-held districts in some of the most difficult territories in the United States, who walked the plank and took innumerable risks in order to defend the American people, just to see some Democrats even consider acquiescing to Elon Musk. I think it is a huge slap in the face, and I think there's a wide sense of betrayal." There is a wide sense of betrayal, so much so that Democratic insiders are getting into her ear now and saying she should primary Chuck Schumer. Now, of course, she still has a re-election to have to win in 2026 to her House seat. But it is not too soon to start primarying Chuck Schumer. It is not too soon to take a look at all of these spineless, old school, pre-Kennedy assassination Democrats who don't understand the world we live in now, who don't understand the attention economy, who don't understand there are no good Republicans. There is no good faith debate on their side. They are the fascists. It's time that we get younger Democrats in power who understand that. Her comment about Democrats walking the plank, you know, in the House of Representatives, that Democratic caucus, you know, 213 Democrats, there's a lot of them in places that Trump won. There's Democrats that won these districts, that won their House race in districts where Trump was more popular. And that was a huge risk for them to stand in solidarity with people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who are considered far lefties. It was a huge risk for them to take in those districts. They put their own jobs, their own re-election on the line to hold fast, to finally show the Democrats have some spine, only for this spineless jellyfish octogenarian of New York, Chuck Schumer, to stab him in the back. Now, Schumer seems to think that if the government was shut down, not only would Trump have more power, as if he doesn't already have the Senate and the House and the majority of the Supreme Court. Not only does he think that it'll hand Trump more power, he thinks the Democrats would somehow get blamed for the government shutdown, for checks not going out, for facilities closing, and so forth. Somehow the Democrats would be blamed. This Chuck Schumer, literally the day before, Donald Trump is out there saying, as far as I'm concerned, he's not Jewish. As far as I'm concerned, he's a Palestinian. Dictating the Jewishness of the highest ranking Jewish official in the federal government. This guy who has the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court, who's got Elon Musk beside him all day, whose opinion, whose popularity ratings are in the toilet, whose approval ratings are underwater, whose stock market is crashing. And Democrats think if they stand up, they're the ones that's going to get blamed. They're the one that's going to look bad, not the 34 times felon, twice impeached, adjudicated race, rapist, convicted fraud, insurrectionist traitor. Not him. He won't look bad. The people will blame the Democrats for the government shutdown. This is crazy. Now, let me continue here with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who on CNN said this continuing resolution codifies much of this chaos that Elon Musk is wreaking. It sacrifices and completely eliminates congressional authority to review these impulsive Trump tariffs and removes all of the guardrails, all of the accountability measures to ensure that money is being spent in the way that Congress has directed for it to be spent. This turns the federal government into a slush fund for Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And Chuck Schumer is ready to let the Republicans pass it. Donald Trump continues to embarrass the United States on the world stage with his continued imperial ambitions, his discussions of annexing Greenland, Panama, and Canada. Let's start with Greenland, the largest island in the world, populated by about 56,000 people and still a territory somewhat controlled, somewhat autonomous, but somewhat controlled by the country of Denmark. Recently, Trump had the Prime Minister of Greenland in the Oval Office there. I'm sorry, the Danish Prime Minister, in the Oval Office, when the reporters there asked him once again about annexing the island of Greenland.
What is your vision for the potential annexation of Greenland and getting them potentially?
I think it'll happen. And I'm just thinking, I didn't give it much thought before, but I'm sitting with a man that could be very instrumental. You know, Mark, we need that for international security, not just security, international. We have a lot of our favorite players, you know, cruising around the coast, and we have to be careful. And we'll be talking to you. It's a very appropriate, really a very appropriate question.
And there's an issue in the high north, so the Arctic, so what you did. So when it comes to Greenland, yes or not joining the U.S., I would leave that outside for me, this discussion, because I don't want to drag NATO in that. But
I'm going to just let that one slide, considering that we're Denmark members of NATO, and now we've got this country, the United States, talking about forcefully acquiring us, which would, of course, invoke Article 5 and require all the NATO alliance countries to join with Denmark in protecting Greenland against another NATO country, the United States. He just talks right out of his ass and not have any consideration for the international implications of what he is saying. First of all, Greenland's not going to become a part of the United States, and the people of the United States aren't going to support some sort of military takeover of this peaceful island of one of our NATO allies. Trump just wants to collect pieces on the game board. This is really about inflating his ego and feeling like he's one of the big autocrats out there. You know, Russia went there and took Crimea, and China wants to take Taiwan. That's going to be happening pretty soon, I can imagine. And so he's got to go along and collect more pieces on his game board as well, or else he won't be a big man. This is really just about his ego. He wants to pretend that it has something to do with international security, that it has to do with protecting us against Russia up there in the Arctic Sea. Well, if you didn't piss off all our allies, we wouldn't have to worry about this stuff. We got Canada up there maintaining patrols over the Arctic. We've got Denmark with its control of Greenland and allowing U.S. bases there as well. There is no major threat that we are worried about at this time that requires us to acquire the island of Greenland. It's not the only place he's looking at, of course. The other news that came across, this is from NBC News, where the Trump administration is directed the U.S. military to draw up options for taking over the Panama Canal, or as he calls it, reclaiming the Panama Canal. Last week when he spoke at the State of the Union, Trump said, quote, "To further enhance our national security, my administration will be reclaiming the Panama Canal." U.S. Southern Command right now is developing plans to partner with Panamanian security forces. But Secretary of State Marco Rubio says, you know, if they don't let us do what we want to do, might have to have some military force go in. Might have to take the canal by force. And the way Trump is trying to sell this is by claiming that China has too much control over the Panama Canal. Understand, though, that the Panama Canal is neutral. Its neutrality is part of the Panamanian Constitution. Under its constitution, the Panama Canal must be neutral to all countries, must be open to all countries to be able to ship through there. What Trump is trying to do here is to strong-arm China. What Trump is trying to do is to make things tougher for China by forcing them to have to take long shipping routes and not being able to use the Panama Canal. This is just another part of his trade wars. His thinking that he needs to battle against all of these countries rather than trade with them. He sees, Trump says that the U.S. military presence in Panama and the canal itself is critical to the effort to fight against China, saying that they got too large a presence near the Panama Canal and they invent, and in the event of a conflict, they say China could shut down the canal to American shipping. China's not in control of the Panama Canal. The other, of course, idiotic situation is his continued talk of annexing Canada, which, of course, the outgoing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau shut down.
Unequivocal in our response.
When Mr. Trump started talking about Canada being a 51st state, your government's original response was to say that it was a joke. Now you're saying that this is a real thing. Can you take us into your mindset? What was the moment that made you switch from thinking it's a joke to a real thing?
I don't think there's a switch. I think, as I've said unequivocally from the beginning, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that Canada will ever be the 51st state.
Isn't it insane that we have to have world leaders actually saying these things? That Canada's not going to be the 51st state. And as I mentioned briefly yesterday, this was kind of picked up by the Globe and Mail in Canada, one of their news sources, which actually took a serious look at it. Like, what would actually have to happen for Canada to be a state? And it pointed out the United States our processes for admitting new states, which requires a House majority and the Senate majority. But of course, Senate would have to get past a filibuster, which takes 60 votes. So we'd have to have at least a Republican majority in the House vote to have Canada as a new state and then get past a Senate filibuster, which would require the cooperation of some Democrats. And as we started at the beginning of this show, we know that that can't always be counted on as an opposition. But again, highly unlikely that any of this would happen through those kind of means. And of course, Canada would resist this terribly. They, you know, they have a military, you know. But Canada's not interested in joining. And the political ramifications of this, which are something that, again, I don't think Trump has thought through this. I was wrong yesterday in my estimation of Canada's population. It's not 30 million. Canada has 41.6 million people. California has 39.4. So if Canada were the 51st state, it would suddenly become the largest state by population and, of course, the largest state by territory. It would be much larger than Alaska. So Canada would get two senators, but then it would also get 55 House seats. 55 House seats. And consider also that the House is capped right now at 435. So those new House seats for Canada would come at the expense of some of the larger states. California would lose some. New York would lose some. Texas would lose some. Florida would lose some. Canada, would suddenly become a huge Democratic state. Now, Canada doesn't have Democrats and Republicans. They've got liberals and conservatives and, you know, other parties, because they're a parliamentarian system, right? Parliamentary system. But on the political spectrum of liberal to conservative, Canadians are far more liberal than the United States. Outside of Alberta and Manitoba, they're pretty blue states or provinces, right? So you're going to create a new state with 41.6 million residents that would have 55 House seats, and the majority of those House seats would end up in Democratic hands or liberal hands, however we're going to call them. He didn't really think this through. And also consider the Electoral College. Canada would have 57 Electoral College votes, because you get 55 for the House people and the extra two for the senators, right? So suddenly Canada would be the biggest prize in the presidential elections. You'd have Canada with 57 Electoral College votes and California with 54 Electoral College votes. There's 111 Electoral College votes that you need on your way to 270. You'd be over a third of the way there with just two states. So again, not thinking through this whole annexation idea, but you want to do it and create a Democratic majority for the next 20, 30 years, go right ahead. Couch enthusiast and Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, put on a little extra eyeliner and headed out for an evening on the town at the Kennedy Center, where he was greeted thusly. Oh, yeah, gotta love it. A chorus of boos for J.D. Vance and his wife as they enter the Kennedy Center balcony for a classical music performance. The National Symphony Orchestra was to play, and there was just a ton of boos. Love to hear that. Vance ironically acknowledged the waving and shouts of "You ruined this place" with a smile and a wave. As you know, the Kennedy Center was taken over by Trump, who went and deposed the ruling board there and installed a bunch of his lackeys. We're talking people like Lee Greenwood are now running the Kennedy Center. And also Usha Vance, the vice president's wife, is also on the board. At the time, Trump said, quote, "So we took over the Kennedy Center. We didn't like what they were showing and various other things. We're going to make sure that it's good and it's not going to be woke. There's no more woke in this country." Which, of course, this has led many performing artists to cancel their performances at the Kennedy Center. The hit musical Hamilton has withdrawn from its run, which was going to start in 2026. Other individual artists have canceled their performances, including Issa Rae, Ben Folds, and Shonda Rhimes. What they're going to find here is when it comes to the arts, the arts have a really, really strong liberal bias. There tend to be a lot of gay people and gender nonconforming people and otherwise liberal people in the arts. So if you want to go to monster truck shows and a Kid Rock concert at the Kennedy Center, this is the organization for you, but don't expect any serious art to be taking place there in the next 4 years. News coming out of New Hampshire, where Jean Shaheen, the Democratic senator for New Hampshire, is up for re-election in 2026. And word now is that former Republican Governor Chris Sununu is eyeing that seat. The Republican was a supporter of Nikki Haley during the Republican primaries, but then switched his vote to Donald Trump when he became the nominee. He's another one of these spineless Republicans who talked tough when it was a chance to get rid of Trump. But once Trump asserted his control over the Republican Party, he fell into line. So Sununu's just another one of these types of Republicans. He had said he wasn't going to be running for the Senate race, but apparently has changed his mind recently. He has been a supporter of DOGE. There was an interview about a month ago where he was on CNN, and he and Anderson Cooper got into it. Anderson Cooper actually called him a dick during the live broadcast. But Sununu is being fooled or purposefully buying into the notion that this DOGE group is somehow saving us money. Oh, they've found so many $1 billion in waste and fraud and abuse, right? Don't be fooled by this DOGE bullshit, people. If you want to find waste, fraud, and abuse, we already had an organization for that in our government called the Government Accountability Office. Chock full of forensic auditors, people who know finance and accounting and can root out fraud. These DOGE kids aren't accountants, they're programmers. That should give you the first clue that they're not looking for waste and fraud and abuse. And if they have found $2.9 billion or whatever billion dollars worth of fraud, that's a crime. Fraud is a crime. Where are the criminal charges for all this fraud? Because what they're finding is not waste, fraud, and abuse. What they're finding is the duly appropriated funds from the Congress being spent on things they don't like. I don't like spending money on U.S. aid to help end tuberculosis and malaria in poor countries. We don't like that, so we're going to call it waste, fraud, and abuse. We don't like the money that's being spent on providing health care to transgender people, so we're just going to call it waste, fraud, and abuse. This is the coup we're talking about. This is the executive branch deciding that they alone have the right to decide where money should be spent, not our Congress. And folks, that's called taxation without representation. That's the whole reason we decided to form a government. We decided to break away from the British is because they were taking our tax money and giving us no say in how it's spent. If DOGE and the executive branch decide that the money that our representatives said should be spent on something isn't getting spent, then that's taxation without representation. We ought to revolt against that. If they're not going to spend our tax money the way our representatives deem it to be spent, we shouldn't be sending them our tax money. Speaking of those DOGE kids and their massive cuts to our federal workforce, finally, the courts are starting to step in. We have a federal judge, Judge William Alsup, who was a President Clinton appointee, issued a ruling that thousands of the federal employees that were fired by the Trump administration must be offered job reinstatement over the next week because they were terminated unlawfully. The judge said, quote, "It is a sad day when our government would fire some good employee and say it was based on performance when they know good and well that is a lie." Because what these DOGE kids did is they went through and just fired all the probationary employees. Everybody that was on probationary status. Now, most people, when you hear probationary status, you think of a job you might have gotten in the past where when you start that job, you got your first 90 days on probation, right? Because like we're going to start you on this job and we'll take 3 months to see if you're any good at it, if you're a good fit. And then if you don't fit within those 3 months, well, you're still in probationary status. So that makes it legally a little easier to terminate you because you didn't pass probation, right? And that's the case with some of those workers. They were brand new hires.
But also, probationary status in federal government jobs can also mean people that are promoted into a new position. So you might have been working at your federal job for 20 years, and then you get a promotion to supervisor. Well, now you're on that probationary status as supervisor, but you're still a 20-year employee. You still have all that experience. And when the cuts came, when they fired these people, the termination notices for many of them said they were fired for performance reasons. Even though these employees could go back to all their performance reviews and show, hey, I got 5-star reviews. I got, 98% rating or whatever. You know, they could show that that was absolute bullshit. So the judge said that was, quote, a sham in order to try to avoid statutory requirements. Also, the judge ordered the Office of Personnel Management, and by the way, OPM currently is being run by that Russ Vaught, the guy who was the architect of Project 2025, the head writer of Project 2025. Yeah, OPM that he runs is basically the HR department for the federal government. That's the guy. The guy, the Project 2025 guy, is the guy that's behind all this. So he said that that office, OPM, has 7 days to offer reinstatement to all the fired probationary employees at the Departments of Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, Treasury, and Veterans Affairs. Now, good luck on getting these employees back, because I don't know about you, but if I was working my government job for 20 years and then on a whim was fired for a bullshit reason, and then a judge says, oh, it's okay, and they have to take you back, would you want to go back? Would you want to go back into the chaos that is currently being unleashed in a job that you probably loved? The White House is blasting this decision, of course, through their spokesperson, KKK, Carolyn Leavitt, said, quote, a single judge is attempting to unconstitutionally seize the power of hiring and firing from the executive branch. The president has the authority to exercise the power of the entire executive branch. Singular district court judges cannot abuse the power of the entire judiciary to thwart the president's agenda. If a federal district court judge would like executive powers, they can try and run for president themselves. The Trump administration will immediately fight back against this absurd and unconstitutional order. Boy, you know, it'd be nice if these people would actually read the Constitution for once when they claim something's unconstitutional, because we do have separation of powers. We do have a judicial branch that acts as a check on the executive and the congressional legislative branch. That is their job. There are laws and rules when it comes to hiring and firing people. They are laws that even the president is subject to. They're trying to paint this, and you hear this from Musk as well, Elon Musk, all the time. Oh, a single judge can thwart the entire federal government. Yes, that's the way our system works. What these guys want is a monarchy. These guys want the king makes the law, and the law is the king. And that's not what America is all about. That's not why we were founded. No kings in this country. We are a nation of laws, or at least we pretended to be. Time for our recurring segment on Boycott Idaho, the handmade state, and in particular, boycotting the Idaho potato. No red state is more associated with one particular product than Idaho and the potato. So we can have a boycott here that directly affects one red state and has little effect on people of color because so few of them live there. We've talked a lot about the state of Idaho and its terrible abortion laws. We've talked about its anti-gay laws. I want to get a little bit more into their hatred of trans people in the state of Idaho and some of the unexpected and unintended consequences of that hate. I had referred on a previous episode of Boycott Idaho to how providing gender-affirming health care for transgender kids is a felony. In the state of Idaho, The law bans puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and certain surgeries for transgender youth, threatening medical providers with felony charges and up to 10 years in prison. And I pointed out previously how ridiculous and anti-liberty this is when you consider the kid wants the trans health care, the parents want the trans health care, the doctors involved want the trans health care. So what the hell business of it is it of anybody else's to get in between that? Again, people's privacy and what they want to do with their lives should be something we all stand up for here in America. We should all believe in bodily integrity and liberty like that. But I also want to point out how this hatred of the trans kids and giving them health care has effect on non-trans kids, has effect on cisgender kids as well. Because they made the law such that you have to get parental consent for any medical care for a minor. So, there was a case where a teenage girl, 13 years old, pregnant 13-year-old, 36 weeks pregnant, going into frequent contractions, comes into an emergency room in a small town, and the doctor there could not examine the girl. The doctor could not treat the pregnant 13-year-old girl going into contractions because her great aunt had brought her to the hospital. So she had no parental consent. There was no parental consent to treat that kid who needed the treatment immediately, 13 years old, going into labor. Couldn't even start the pelvic exam because mom and dad weren't there to give permission. So they reach out, they go to try to find mom. Well, mom is homeless. She's living in a car somewhere. They can't find her. So they keep looking, trying to find someone that can give the consent. They finally track down the grandma. Grandma gives verbal consent, says, yeah, go ahead. You can start treating my 13-year-old pregnant granddaughter. And they had to get that consent from her from jail. She was in jail in Boise on drug charges. And remember, in Boise, Idaho, drug charges could mean they caught her with a joint. So this furor to ban health care for trans kids actually affected the 13-year-old pregnant girl. The cisgender 13-year-old pregnant girl. Another unintended consequence of this. We have a bill sponsored, this bill that was passed in Idaho that bans the use of taxpayer dollars to perform any gender-affirming health care. Not just the trans kids, but all gender-affirming healthcare, even for adults, cannot be paid for through Medicaid in Idaho. Okay? So, no matter how rich you are, you can't get trans healthcare for your kid. And if you're poor and reliant on Medicaid, you can't get trans healthcare for yourself. But only if you're trans. You can get that same exact health care, the same exact procedure paid for by Medicaid if you're cisgender. So, this actually came down to a case where a doctor met a trans masculine patient, okay, a trans man, right, who wanted a hysterectomy for heavy and painful bleeding during menstruation called dysmenorrhea. Okay? We've got a trans man who wants a hysterectomy for this painful condition. But the doctor points out that Medicaid denied the request for not meeting medical necessity. And while the patient had some bleeding, the majority of the notes indicated this was a planned elective surgery for gender reassignment. So a trans man has these horrifically painful periods for which a hysterectomy would fix it. But we're not considering that a medical need. We're considering that gender transition. Someone who's already living as a man. We're considering that gender transition, so we won't give him the hysterectomy, and we're going to force him to continue to live in this pain. But over the past year, three cisgender patients got hysterectomies for the same exact condition. So, ladies, Medicaid will pay for your hysterectomy, but only if you continue to act like a lady. Earlier this week, I made a comment about how the MAGA movement perceives itself to be the real Americans and why they have a certain historical justification for doing so. If you're looking at things from their perspective, they see America as a place that was formed by people escaping religious persecution for being Christian, a certain type of Christian, and they needed to come to the new land to establish a new homeland where white male people, white male Christian people could live unfettered by the Europeans that were giving them problems. So they came over to America and wiped out all the native people there that they could find and brought over some black people to do all the work and let some Chinese immigrate in to complete the railroads. But from their point of view, from the MAGA point of view, this is a country for white guys. This is a white American English speaking Christian land. And for them, since about the 1930s, the United States has strayed from its ordained path as being the great Christian holy land for white people. You can see why they want to get back to that. Put women back in their place. Make sure that the minorities understand they're there to serve the upper class whites. That's their perspective. It's not mine. To me, the beauty of America, the vision of America, has been brought forth by all the non-white, non-men, non-Christian people who struggled to force this country to live up to its founding principles. When those old white guys wrote, "All men are created equal," in their mind, they were thinking of themselves as the men. But everybody else reading that, over the years, have taken that to mean all people, all of us, all Americans. And we came forth to put down a constitution that gave birthright citizenship, that said anybody that's born here can be an American. It's not a country based on your race, based on your ethnicity, based on your religion, based on your credo. This is a country that anyone can be a part of so long as they adhere to the American spirit that we are all created equal. We are all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, which include, but are not limited to, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's why we exist. And it's something that very foundation is what's under attack right now from this Trump coup. They openly talk about being a dictator on day one, openly putting up things from the White House account saying, "Long live the king." Because they've come to recognize the democracy we created was fantastic for them when only the white guys could vote. Then those persistent women kept protesting for the right to vote, and we gave them the right to vote. And then we had all the blacks out there protesting, and we had to get rid of the Jim Crow laws, and we had to have the Voting Rights Act, and all of a sudden, now all the minorities are voting, and, well, the next thing you know, they're passing laws that don't exalt the white man over everyone else. They're actually passing laws to treat everyone equally. Or begin the attempt to treat everyone equally. And that's what this whole MAGA movement has been since Donald Trump came down that escalator in 2015. It's all been about returning America to its Jim Crow past, putting the minorities back in their place, to putting the women back in the kitchen, to put the gays back in the closet, and to erase the transgender people entirely. Why do we have a government? For me, the heroes of America are the Dr. Kings and the Bayard Rustins and the Marsha P. Johnsons and the Susan B. Anthonys and all those people who fought to make America live up to those founding ideals. Let's review them. Why do we have a government? Why do we even bother having a government? Why do we have sets of laws? Why don't we just let criminal warlords run everything? Why don't we just let the businesses run everything? Why do we have a government? The nice thing is we wrote it all down. We wrote down all our reasons for having a government. I can recite them to you in verse. We the people, in order to form a perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. That's a take, of course, from the Schoolhouse Rock. Those of you in the Generation Jones know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't even think of the preamble of the Constitution without singing it, can you? That's how I always remember it. Can we get back to some of that, too, for the kids? Can we get back to some informational programming that's fun and memorable? I'm 57 years old, and I still remember that damn song. Well, let's go to it, right? We formed a country. We formed our Constitution to create a more perfect union. What does that mean? Well, that means that we've got a bunch of different states. We got some states that are conservative and some states that are liberal. We got some states that are urban and some states that are rural. We got some states that are coastal and some states that are landlocked. And in order for them all to get along, we need to make sure that a person from one state can feel at home in another state. That trade can easily flow from state to state. Donald Trump and MAGA stand opposed to all of that. They don't want a more perfect union. They want a union in their image where all the states have to be like Alabama or Idaho or Missouri. And it's not going to work. They want the right. When they talk about states' rights. You hear a lot of that from the right. We want states' rights. What they mean by that is they want their state to have the right to treat people differently than other states. They want their state to be able to treat gay people differently. They want their state to be able to discriminate against the black people. They want their state to be able to kick out the immigrants. That's not a more perfect union. Establish justice. We have a constitution to establish justice, but we got a Supreme Court that says the president isn't subject to it. We got a court that says to establish justice, but we've got agencies and pseudo-agencies like DOGE ignoring the court's orders. Domestic tranquility. We created this nation in order to have some domestic tranquility, to have peace. But we've got Donald Trump talking about having the military shoot protesters who engage in their First Amendment rights. We've got the disappearance of Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University student who was arrested with no warrant, given no access to lawyers, taken away all the way to Louisiana to some detention facility. That's not domestic tranquility. To provide for the common defense seems to be the only thing the MAGA people are interested in, warfare, military. But how are we providing for our common defense by pissing off all our allies? How are we defending ourselves by provoking fights with Canada and Greenland and Panama? How are we defending ourselves by shredding NATO? Promote the general welfare. Well, what does that mean, the general welfare? The general well-being of the people, their health, economically and physically. And yet we have a government here that wants to shut down Social Security. Wants to shut down Medicaid, shut down Medicare, because they're just costing too much. costing too much, and we got to find a way to save enough money to give tax breaks to billionaires. Once again, coming out here saying ridiculous stuff like, oh, we need to raise the retirement age. Yeah, raise the retirement age to 70. The same people that say we want to raise the retirement age to 70 are the same people who won't hire anybody over the age of 50. How's that work? People who talk about raising the retirement age to 70 don't work jobs that require heavy lifting or driving or anything that's physically demanding. We don't need to raise the retirement age. We don't need to cut benefits. Everybody knows how to save Social Security. There's a cap on the Social Security taxes. I don't know what the number is now. At one point, it was $167,000. Maybe it's bigger than that now. I haven't paid attention. But basically, somewhere in the six figures is where taxation on Social Security stops, right? So like, I make $50,000 a year, I got to pay 6% tax to Social Security. I make $75,000 a year, I pay 6% tax to Social Security. I pay $100,000, 6% goes to Social Security. But once you get to a certain level, they don't tax it anymore. Like, up to, again, let's say it's $167,000, 6% of your $167,000 goes out. But after that, any more money you make after that is exempt from Social Security taxes. Why? Why has this ever been the case? Why is there a limit that says, well, once you get rich enough, you don't have to pay into Social Security? I don't understand how this ever came to be in the first place, much less the idea of getting rid of it or not getting rid of it. If we remove the tax or the cap on the tax for Social Security would be solvent for decades. There'd be no problem whatsoever with Social Security. But that would require rich people to be slightly less rich. So screw our general welfare in that case, right? To secure the blessings of liberty. Blessings of liberty that we're free to go about and live our lives. Unless we're gay or we're trans, or we have a different political point of view when it comes to Gaza or Palestine. We all deserve the blessings of liberty, even if we have points of view that disagree with the administration. And we did all of this. We made this Constitution all for ourselves and our posterity. So not just to protect and provide for ourselves, but for the generations in the future, who we're now screwing over by abandoning all efforts to deal with climate change and ruining the future for the kids and the grandkids and the generations after us. So when you look at the reasons why we have a government, to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, in every manner, the Trump administration is attacking our Constitution and the reason for it in every single arena. I've said it before, if a foreign adversary had committed a cyber attack that suddenly caused the firing of all these thousands of federal workers, wouldn't we consider that an act of war? That's what's happening, folks. MAGA has declared war on our Constitution, on every aspect of it. Everything they do makes us less secure, less safe, and less free. And if you're a real American, if you stand by the minorities, the women, and the white folks who have fought against slavery, abolition, the abolitionists, the suffragettes, those are the people we should be emulating. It's time to look to the civil rights movement and what they went through. Just fighting for the right to exist, to vote, to be. I saw that, what was the, oh no, there could be repercussions, there could, they might write a mean tweet. Oh no, they might fund a primary challenger. John Lewis got his skull bashed in. Martin Luther King had to deal with death threats all the time. Our politicians could have just a little more of that courage that we need. Because this fight is only beginning. And don't think that it just goes away with Donald Trump. I see a lot of memes out there, people saying, oh, is he dead yet? Boy, I'm only looking for one obituary. I don't want Donald Trump to die. You realize how bad things would be if Trump died right now? How he would achieve martyr status in the MAGA movement? How the most unpredictable loose cannon of the movement would suddenly be gone and revered? And then you got J.D. Vance taking over for him? No. We need Trump to live. We need Trump to live, to be impeached, defeated in the next election, arrested by the International Criminal Court, whatever. Death is too good for this guy. Death means he got away with it his entire life. Death means he got to be an asshole since the 70s and never face any serious repercussions. No, I don't want Donald Trump to die. I want Donald Trump to live a long life. I'd like to see Donald Trump make it to Kissinger age. Behind bars. And it goes down smooth. Hey! Well, that's it for today's program. The Radical Rush Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons Sharealike Licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalruss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to @RadicalRuss on Venmo, $RadRuss on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalruss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.